Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber.
This episode of Red Inca, we look at bouncers and helmets. To do that, we get on someone who has worked as a writer and media person for Cricket Australia.
Malcolm Conn, recently chief cricket writer of the Sydney Morning Herald, now freelancing in the cricket world, doing a bit for The Roar and various other bits and pieces and thoroughly enjoying it.
We talk about Phil Hughes, helmet design, Kerry Packer, playing bouncers, concussions, 3D printing, Will Pekoski, and the NFL.
So you're here because you wrote a piece for the bestofcricket.substack.com about Phil Hughes and helmets and concussions and everything. I didn't realise, though, mate, that you were there the day that Phil was fatally hit.
Yes, mate, yes. It was a very sad and difficult day, unfortunately, or week, really. I was working as the sort of senior media manager at Cricket Australia in a joint role with Cricket New South Wales, and I was sitting in my office a couple of hundred metres from the ground watching while I was working on the stream and saw Phil get hit. And the worst thing about it was just the way he fell. Like, usually when someone gets hit, they go down and protect themselves, or they go crumple at the knees. Phil just sort of stood for a moment completely still and then just fell forward without protecting himself. And as soon as you saw that, you knew there was a problem, and it just sort of escalated from there, obviously. I rang our CEO and I ran down to the ground, and the three photographers there all had their cameras down, and I said, "What's going on?" And they said, Brad Haddon, who was New South Wales captain and obviously Australian keeper at the time, told us to put our cameras down. And then I looked further around the boundary, and by that stage, John Orchard, the doctor, he had Phil off the ground on one of those medicabs, the sort of motorised stretchers, and a couple of people were holding up a white tablecloth so you couldn't see him working on Phil, and I heard him say, "I've got a pulse." And as soon as I heard that, I thought, crikey. I mean, he was in trouble from the outset, unfortunately. So it was just one of those very sad reflex things that had major repercussions. Obviously, it was very sad for the family in particular, and there's so many mates he had. He was such a vibrant, cheeky, happy young fella, and a real talent. Like, he had a homespun technique, and obviously there were times when he's had to sort of try and polish that up a bit for international cricket, but overall, a sad day, and a couple of sad days at the St Vincent's Hospital just down the road, where it became clear by the next morning. I was there when the family were told that, sadly, Phil wasn't going to come back, and it's terrible to see. You just can't imagine having to be in a position where you lose your son or your brother in those circumstances, and they made the decision to keep him alive for another 24 hours so that players from around the country could fly in and say goodbye. It was a very sad and difficult time, and it prompted a lot of research into helmets and the ongoing issue of concussion in cricket, which is sort of obviously a great issue in a number of sports, and there's some discussion about whether or not the helmets actually add to the problem by giving players a false sense of security.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that, but just before we did, I remember when it happened, I wrote a piece online, I must have been with Crick Info at the time, and I wrote a piece about how there will be a discussion about bouncers into the future and whether we will continue to see bouncers and, you know, whether the game is safe and everything else. We had like a brief discussion about that, like a sort of moral panic of, you remember when Mitchell Johnson hit Virat Kohli in the head in the Adelaide test, and it was the first time we ever saw Mitchell Johnson looked really worried when he'd hit someone in the head, right? There was clearly an issue that went, but right after that, it was really a technological change, right? We saw the neck protectors and, you know, even for the wicket keepers, we see the thing under the chin now and everything else. We really decided in cricket that we wanted bouncers to remain, didn't we? And it was about how to make them more safe rather than outlawing the practice altogether.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. The game stayed basically the same. But certainly I think that players' awareness rose enormously. I mean, in the gruff old days of a bowler would hit a batsman and say a few nasty words to him and stomp back to his mark, whereas now if a batsman gets hit, you see all the fielders and the bowler all run down to make sure he's okay. And it's always in the back of the mind that, again, that people knew that you could get hurt in but thought that it was relatively safe isn't safe. We know that now, that there is a possibility that the worst could happen. So, but the bouncer has stayed and the head protection certainly has improved, and certainly talking to the medical staff and the staff, the CEO from Missouri who develop and make these helmets, it's certainly a lot of work continuing to go into how they can continue to make them safer.
Yeah, I think that the helmet stuff is really interesting. But what I didn't realize until I saw your piece was just how many times people were actually getting hit on the head. And, you know, looking back at players like Alan Border and Justin Langer and Chris Rogers, like, we know there are certain players who certainly got hit on the head a lot. But was it in Shield cricket? Was it the numbers where you said there were 40 players hit on the head in the year? Or was that in Test cricket that those numbers
were from? That was first-class players in Australia. So that was across the Sheffield Shield and international cricket. So the average of a player being hit is once every 2 years, which doesn't sound very much. But when you've got 80 players across a competition, that's 40 a year. So that's a significant number. And there's a lot of research being done. It's now documented every time someone gets hit, either at training or in a game. And they're monitored, and the how they were hit, the angle they were hit at, whether it was a glancing blow, whether it was a full-on blow, the relative speed of the bowler, like who was bowling, so you got an idea of roughly how fast they were bowling. It's all monitored now, and then the player is monitored to then gauge, well, being hit at that angle, at that speed, what impact has that had over the journey for X number of players to get some sort of average or mean as to where what type of damage is being done and how it's being done.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it except for one, this little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally. And so you talked to Matt Hayden, who basically said that the phrase that helmets save lives. And we know that that is true, and that plays a big part. But what has happened in cricket? And I'm a little bit younger than you, Conman. I'm just young enough to have played in an era where not everyone wore helmets in Australia. And then people started to wear helmets. So when I played juniors, you had to go out in a helmet and bat. But once you'd faced about, you know, four overs, you could take it off and no one had any issue in junior cricket if you did that. And so that's what we would all do. We'd wear the helmet, and the opposition fast bowler didn't look that fast. We'd take it off and then we go. So I got used to batting without a helmet, whereas pretty much every generation after me got used to batting with a helmet. And I never got hit in the head in that kind of way. I had one in the chin in a net when I was trying to flick one off my pads, but I never got hit in all the years that I played cricket with the short ball, because I knew that I didn't have a helmet on and I had to do that. Whereas a lot of my friends who wore helmets continually got hit in the head. Mm-hmm. And that's because there is something within our techniques that changes when we're wearing a helmet. And so players who wear helmets actually get hit in the head far more than players who never used to wear helmets. We could tell that by just watching old footage of cricket. It's very rare to see someone actually get hit in the head.
That's right, exactly. And I went back and looked at highlights of a number of leading players sort of in the pre-helmet era and in the post-helmet era, and it's really interesting. And someone like Ian Chappell, it's really obvious. Ian Chappell was a back and across player and drums it like a mantra that you go back and across, you can step in line. If it's wide, you can cut it, you can hook it, you can duck it. Whereas Hayden will say, well, I went back and across and I was in a very static position. I found when I pressed forward, I got in a dynamic position so that I could play much more aggressively. But by pressing forward, you don't have the opportunity to move your back leg back and across. It's short. You swivel off your back leg where it's sitting, so the ball's coming at you. So it's a fundamental difference. And if you talk to Ian and Greg Chappell, they will say that they see more people get hit in one test than they saw get hit during their whole careers. It was interesting that they both said that they never wore helmets during the first year of World Series cricket. And after David Hooks got hit by Andy Roberts, broke his jaw hooking, Kerry Packer demanded that they wear helmets. So the cricket helmets that they said they initially wore were riding helmets that were painted to fit the colours of the game.
Yeah, there's a fascinating story about the whole Kerry Packer thing and helmets and everything. I think he said to Ian Chappell directly something along the lines of, I'm not paying for you to be sitting in hospital for 8 weeks, so you have to wear a helmet. But you're right, they had the riding helmets, and then before that they had the motorbike helmets, of course, which didn't work. So everyone was trying everything. And I remember, I think it was the motorbike helmets, they had tested it because they had to test it in a different way. So they shot it with like a shotgun or something to see if it could take the impact of a cricket ball, but of course the batters couldn't hear each other, so it didn't help for running between the wickets. And then, as you said, the equestrian side of things come in. It's all that's really fascinating. The issue I think that comes in, you know, and we have better grills now than we used to have. Like, we haven't had players get the ball squeezed through the grill in a long time, which used to be a very common thing. You know, we have the neck protectors now, of course, which are really, really interesting. But the problem with helmets right across all sports, and you could say cycling as well, just normal human cycling, not just the, you know, at Olympic level, is what they are trying to do is stop you from getting your skull broken or your brain directly damaged from the impact of the ball. What we are now finding out is that, of course, the other issue is that the helmet stops that from happening, but it means that your brain bounces around your head. And as you said before, if you're in a situation where you're getting hit 4, 5, 6 times, you know, in a season, that the impact of that, we now know, is, you know, this through CTE and everything else, the helmets stop the impact blows, but they actually cause other issues that we haven't been able to look at, right?
Well, that's right. It stops the you're getting a broken skull, but the shock has to go somewhere. The energy of the ball hits the helmet and then it presses the helmet into the head. Now, there is padding in the helmet, but it only works to a degree, so that there is nothing at this stage in a helmet that, if you get hit badly in the wrong place, will stop you from getting concussion. It will lessen the blow, and there may be less episodes of concussion, but it's still that they. what I've been told is they could prevent concussion, but you'd have to put a foot of padding inside the helmet between the head and the outside of the helmet to absolutely be sure of stopping it. So what they're looking to do is make the padding lighter so they can get more in it. The interesting one was sort of there's now digital printing going on, and now some international and state and county players are wearing these helmets that they do a 360-degree scan of the head and then print this sort of almost like a latex material. It's not solid, but it's got cells in it, and it fits the shape of your head. So not only is it more comfortable, but it stops the helmet from rattling around in your head as much. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to stop you from getting concussion, but again, it can lessen the blows, so it's not as bad as it would have been previously. But there's still no definitive answer.
Well, so the NFL is really interesting because obviously their sport is almost ruined by the whole concussions part of it. And I don't know if you've seen, there's a player in the NFL at the moment who started wearing a soft helmet. So traditionally, of course, everyone's had hard helmets in American football, and then suddenly they've gone with soft. So everyone is trying to work this out. You see in rugby, the whole idea of not tackling high anymore and all that sort of thing. There's no easy answers for any of this, because it's very hard for a bowler to be in a for a player to be in a situation where they think to themselves that we are going to as a sport, I should say, that we're going to go away from short pitch bowling. Like, so short pitch bowling is going to be there. And even if we got rid of short pitch bowling, you still have sweeps and reverse sweeps and laps and everything. Like, the head is always going to be in play in cricket, isn't it? There's no way around that.
Well, that's right. And we only have to look back to the last day of the test in Adelaide to see how effective the short ball is. I mean, if you watch Cummins and Stark in full flight, Pat Cummins took 7 wickets in that test, 5 in the second innings, and 5 were from short balls, and he and Stark just ravaged the tail, just cleaned them up, and a lot of that was built around the short ball. So there's no qualms about using every piece of armoury that you can in the claim that you want to get someone out, but clearly it's a physical intimidation. I mean, the NFL is an interesting one, that the players were using their helmet as battering rams, so it was actually counterproductive.
Yeah, no, and also the NFL went out of their way to say that this wasn't happening. Right. And, you know, that this wasn't an issue. And when we first got to cricket, I remember I would write about this and say, look, you know, there's a reason why Justin Langer was told not to field at short leg anymore. That our doctors must be assuming the same things are happening across cricket that we have seen in other sports. And originally you would get a bunch of people, especially from Australia more so than anywhere else, saying, mate, it's a man's game. You know, stop being soft at everything. It's like, we're not trying to be soft. We're trying to make sure that these players who are, I've always thought that there's a real lot of top order players specifically who are short leg fielders who are in so much more danger than everyone else, because they're getting the hard ball hitting them from the opening bowlers, and then they're fielding at short leg and they're getting the ball flicked at them. Like, we have positions in cricket that are set up specifically and can be quite dangerous. And, you know, we look at older cricketers, and you and I have met a couple that I wouldn't say they're punch drunk in the way that you see that sort of term that we used to use in boxing, but there is an element of sometimes you wonder how many times they were actually struck. And so we really have to factor that into the sport from junior all the way through to test level.
Now that's right. I mean, it's something that people are working very hard on, but it's a reality that that everyone has to put up with or understand that this game has some serious implications.
And that is why Nasser Hussain decided to bowl first at the Gabba. And this all, of course, reminds me of Hit Wicket, which is a mobile cricket strategy game that is all about making those tough decisions. Who do you want to send in as an opener when the asking rate is climbing? Do you go for the big hitter or the steady accumulator? Me, I like to throw in someone a little bit unorthodox, a bit of a wild card like the general. That keeps the opposition guessing. And what about the bowling attack? Do you unleash your express pace early or hold back for the death overs? I'm always tempted to bring on a mystery spinner in the middle overs and just try and break a partnership. Hit Wicket puts you in the captain's chair. You draft the squad and select the batting order and even decide when to use those game-changing abilities. Do you burn your 2x ability to chase down a big total or save it for a critical moment later on? It's strategic, it's addictive, and it's more nerve-wracking than facing a Shoaib Akhtar bouncer. Give it a go. Download Hit Wicket and see if you've got the tactical nous to win.
Now, you were before, as you said before, when you worked with Cricket Australia, you were there with the Phil Hughes issue, but you're also, or not issue, sorry, that he's passing, but you're also there for a lot of time when Will Pekoski was playing.
Yes.
And I wonder how that was treated internally, because Will Pekoski obviously had multiple issues. He has his own mental health issues, which are already more than most players, you know, would want to deal with. But then Cricket Australia is trying to deal with the fact that he has a technique where he doesn't get out of the way of the short ball. He does get hit in the head a lot. And obviously he was very prone to concussions. How did you guys try and, you know, deal with that from a, you know, your side from the media, but also from the health and well-being of the player side?
Well, that's a situation where you just have to trust the medical experts, and they do all the examination. And if he's not showing any symptoms and he's reacting well, then he would get a clearance to play. But the problem was that you didn't know, and the medical staff will tell you this, that every concussion is different and every heart concussion is difficult to quantify, and you don't know the long-term effects of repeated concussions. I mean, he got his first concussion as a schoolboy AFL footballer sort of 10 years ago. So it's not just cricket. I mean, this is something that he suffered. And it's interesting, a couple of years ago, they put a panel together to examine him, and they found that they weren't sure whether he suffered a concussion every time, because by that stage I think he sort of suffered 11 or 12, but they weren't sure whether some of the concussions, or they drew a conclusion that they thought some of the concussions were actually his body and his mind reacting to the fact he'd been hit. So even though he was showing concussion-like symptoms, it was a shock taking him back to previous bad concussions where the body and the mind were reacting, but he actually wasn't actually suffering concussion itself. It was almost like a sort of a trauma from previously being hit. But obviously this last bad one, he got hit when Riley Meredith hit him and he just ducked straight into a bouncer in Tasmania. I just don't think anyone had any choice but to say, look, I'm sorry. We, you know, as good as you were and are, he was only 26 years old, you can't keep getting hit. And now the problem comes down to, well, here's the other part of it. What's the liability? If he retires, he gets paid out for his contract. If he gets found to be medically retired, well, then he probably gets paid out for a lifetime of cricket. So he probably gets 10 years payout instead of a 12-month state payout. So now there's a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiations going on between Cricket Victoria and his legal team about how this is all going to be sorted out.
Yeah, and I think I remember, was it Nathan Bracken was one of the first cricketers I remember who sued, and I know there's been a couple of other smaller lawsuits and everything else at times with players. And, you know, I remember when the Bracken one came out, there are some players who are like, don't do that, this is going to cause issues for us going forward. But also in Will Pekoski's case, he's done everything he can to get himself to a position to be able to play this sport at the top level. He's now got to rebuild his entire future. Like, you can understand where he's at and everything else. So it's such a complicated issue, and there's no easy answers for, you know, Cricket Australia or Cricket Victoria or anything else. But I want to finish with just talking to you. You know, I've read your columns for years. You know, you like the rough and tumble of cricket and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, talk about men being men, con man. You've done all that sort of stuff before. We've all seen it. How much is things like with Phil Hughes and talking to Missouri about the helmets and concussion and Will Pekoski, how much has it changed you? Because I think when I was young, I was just like, yeah, but that part of the challenge is you go out and sometimes you're going to get hit in the head. That's what the sport is. Whereas now I think maybe let's just make sure that this is a safer game so that we don't get Phil Hughes and Will Pekoski situations going ahead.
That's right. There was a very simplistic sort of almost medieval crusader attitude to being brave. The footballer got a broken jaw and went back on and played. The cricketer who got his eye opened up and went back out and batted, and you said, oh, he was brave. He's the sort of the manly hero. Well, now, and certainly with the Phil Hughes thing, was such a terrible thing that everyone gets hit. Every time someone gets hit, it's not come on, get up, you soft so-and-so. It's, geez, I hope he's all right. Because it just brings you totally back to the reality of exactly what it's like. And anybody who goes out there and faces bowling at 140 kilometres an hour, if anyone has been in front of a bowling machine at 140 kilometres an hour, you realise how quick it is and how little time you have to react. And you realise how dangerous it can be. So, yeah, my attitude has changed completely from one of, you know, get up and get on with it, you're soft, to, geez, I hope he's all right. And, you know, yes, he must be examined. That if he's not right, yes, he must go off. So, yeah, and I think that's across the game. Just look at the attitude of the fielders now and the other players now to someone who gets hit. It's very different to what it used to be.
No, definitely. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for having me. Look forward to catching up.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.